Hi, everyone. This is Scott Eblen, and welcome to another great conversation I'm going to have with an author for the Next Level blog. Today's guest, I'm really pleased and excited to say, is Maria Van Hecken. Maria is a longtime colleague and friend of mine, full disclosure there, who's written a wonderful new book called Leading with Yes. And the subtitle of the book is especially important. Sometimes subtitles aren't that important, but this one is, because the subtitle is a practical guide to discovering and living your extraordinary story. And that's actually what the yes in the Leading with Yes main title means, is your extraordinary story. So Maria, welcome. Really glad that we're doing this.
Me too. Thank you.
My great pleasure. So, like I said, the subtitle is super important. Tell me, please, what you mean by your extraordinary story.
What I mean by that is most of us are living a much smaller story than we're really capable of. And I would love if each of us, including myself and you, which I think you are, to live a bolder, more grand story so that we can make a bigger difference in the world.
Perfect. I should have said in the intro, and I just got so caught up in the moment, I forgot to say that you are a longtime leadership coach, a veteran leadership coach, and a member of the faculty at the leadership coaching program at Georgetown, and quite accomplished in your field. And one of the things I like about your book is it's like having a coaching conversation. You know, you've very much written it in a first and second person, you know, kind of style, where it feels very conversational. And you tell a lot of stories in the book about clients that you've worked with and helping them, you know, kind of articulate and draw out the nuances and improve their own stories. How did you even get started on that? I mean, like, you know, at what point did story become such a focus of your coaching work?
I guess Georgetown planted that seed in me with so much work on story, and the Chalmers Brothers book, Language in the Pursuit of Happiness, was instrumental in the importance of story for me. And I've always loved language. I love words. I get multiple words of the day, and I'm just fascinated by the power of language.
That's really fascinating. I mean, and obviously story is all about language, right? So what a great kind of nexus of different passions and interests for you. It's kind of a cool example, really, in of living your own story, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because I think one of the things I say in the book, which I truly believe, is that we are now who we've always been, even as a child. And words were extremely important to me then. I was a voracious reader. And I guess as a child, you use more imagination and you think the sky is the limit. And then as we grow up and maybe we experience a failure here or a loss there or a disappointment, we stop thinking so big and so, you know, we don't have a vision of what could be as much as, oh, I want to avoid that. Or I hear so many leaders say to me, oh, I just kind of happened into this role. I didn't really want it. I don't really deserve it. And that's the furthest thing from the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's another thing you say early in the book, or that you write, I think the quote is, it's actually you're quoting somebody else, and I don't remember who else you quoted, but I wrote the quote down. It's, we are the stories we tell ourselves. Could you talk a little bit about that idea and why that was important enough to you to put it early in the book?
I think there's a lot to that, right? So we have, all we are is really language, the thoughts we think, the words we speak, the words we write, and body language, you know, how we portray ourselves. And we don't realize we can be the director and the casting director and the script writer and the costume designer. Mm-hmm. We have all the power to create the story that we want. Not to say we won't have disappointments or that we'll get everything we ask for, but if we think a little bit grander about who we can be, I think at our essence, we know what we're capable of, and sometimes fear gets in the way. I know it does for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read somewhere a long time ago that, and I'd like to think this is true. I'm not sure if it's not one of those myths that we read on the internet, but I'm going to say that it's true in this case because it's cool and I like it. That in the Aramaic language, which was the language that Jesus spoke, that in Aramaic there is a phrase that basically translates in modern day as abracadabra or abracadabra. I don't know how they were to pronounce it, but you know, the modern magician word abracadabra is derived from this Aramaic phrase, which translated means roughly, "I speak and it is created."
Oh, that is so beautiful. I love that.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that reading your book, because a lot of it, I mean, a lot of the work you're doing and what you're trying to encourage the reader to do is articulate, right? And say out loud, write out loud, if you will, their story.
And believe it and breathe it. Who is it? DeWitt, the famous photographer from the National Geographic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He says, "I'll see it when I believe it." Which, you know, obviously turns upside down the I'll believe it when I see, or I'll.
I believe it when I see it, right? Yeah. And I'll see it when I believe it. Yeah. It sort of reminds me of a quote I read about from Queen Elizabeth a few years ago. Her line is, "I have to be seen to be believed," which meaning that most people, if they see the Queen in person, they're going to be several hundred yards away from her. And she was talking about why her wardrobe choices were important. You know, she has to convey the image of the Queen, you know, from a distance. If you believe in the Queen, you have to see her.
Yeah. Maybe we're all queens, you know, we need to be seen. And so many of us just tell a smaller story. And I really wish for all of us, and I think you're a really good example of it, Scott, is that we take our stories and we be vulnerable and humble and bring our gifts to the world like you did with mindfulness.
No, well, thank you. I appreciate that. So, you know, the stories we tell ourselves, you're a leadership coach. How do the stories we tell ourselves affect the way we lead? I mean, what have you observed about that over the years?
Yeah, there's so many ways it does. And I think one is that if we act bigger and we dare to achieve, then we're modeling that for the people that we work with, that see us, and then we'll also believe that it's possible. So that's one thing. I also think that leaders who are more positive and more encouraging, you know, we can't control how much encouragement we receive. We can only determine how much we'll give. And a leader that can give that encouragement to themselves and to others will lead to much more team performance.
Yeah, I think that's completely true. I mean, anybody who has listened to my interviews at all or has read anything I've written on my blog over the last 2 or 3 years is I'm always writing or saying, you know, leaders control the weather, you know, that however the leader shows up is completely predictive of how their team is going to show up. And, you know, so if the leader, I guess in the case of the story, right? I mean, the story has a big impact on the climate, right?
It certainly does. And people will draw conclusions from things you either do or say, and maybe not, you know, when we're making things up, it's usually not good. I had a client who didn't believe she had an impact on her staff. And I said to her, "Well, why don't you try doing something different tomorrow," whatever day it was. And she went into her office, and all she did was, instead of greeting everyone as she usually did, she went into her office and closed the door for 5 minutes. When she came out 5 minutes later, they were absolutely certain that something terribly
wrong. Oh, wow. Yeah.
She's like, "Okay, I believe you now." So what I do in determining the climate, I guess, is actually very real.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion you had for her, like a little experiment, right? And she probably spent the rest of the day getting people to come back to Earth after she set them off.
It was the absence of doing something that had the impact. So maybe those storms that were brewing had nothing to do with any particular action. So it's very important
right
how we act.
And then, and then, you know, in the interim, of course, her staff was making up a big story, right? About, oh my gosh, what's happening, right? So your whole book, really, and I don't want you to, you know, it's not fair to, it wouldn't be fair to you to ask you to describe everything in the book, but the book basically is about the process of moving from whatever story you're currently living to clarifying and articulating and then living your more extraordinary story. Could you give us kind of the high level overview of what that process looks like? How do you move to the other?
The first thing is you have to be aware. You can't change anything you're not aware of. So I spend the first part of the book getting people to notice the language that they're using, the stories that they're telling over and over again, and basically get a snapshot of where they are in the current moment. And then I ask them to think about their past and the stories that they've created from that. Here's where a lot of the juice is, because sometimes we take individual stories from our past and we make it almost predict our future, our success, who we are as a person. And that doesn't necessarily have to be true. So I ask people to look at things from a different perspective. And I'm huge on asking people to look for the gifts, because no matter what the circumstance, there's a gift. And again, I think of your book, Overworked and Overwhelmed, your gift was moving, you know, into yoga in such a deep way. You probably wouldn't have asked for that experience, but you created the gift and you lived into that new story. And then once people see the gifts in the past and embrace who they are and what they've been through, then I ask them about legacy and what their purpose is so that they can get a bigger vision of who they really are and who they've always been. And once people determine a legacy, and I do talk about it in a very casual voice, as you know, because it's not some big thing. Like, you are going to have a legacy. It's just a matter of what it's going to be, because your legacy is the result or the sum and substance of all the actions or thoughts or things that you've had throughout your life and what you've accomplished. So it's not whether you'll have a legacy.
Yeah, you will, right?
Legacy will be, right? And then from those three points, I ask people to develop a new story based on a very simple system, to just create that. So going from the old story to the new story can be a transformational process.
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, you write in the book about a client that you had who was a breast cancer survivor, and I was really struck by the story you told about her, and that the way, I think the way you wrote it, as the way she perceived her reality was really based on the way she framed the facts, right, of her breast cancer. I mean, the fact was she had breast cancer, but she framed that in a way that was actually productive, I guess, and uplifting.
Yes.
You maybe could tell a little bit more about the story, but talk a little bit, if you would, about the link between the way we perceive reality and the way we frame facts, and in her case, the difference it made for her.
Yeah. In her case, I mean, I was stunned when she told me how blessed she was. Any other person that's told me how sick they were, had a major illness like that, kind of goes through all the facts of what there was and what the prognosis is and how they feel and whatever. And she was just absolutely thrilled. And it seemed such, like, so incongruent, right, with what had transpired. But she said, every day people reached out to her. Every day she had gifts. Every day she missed work. And the thing that most astounded me was she couldn't wait to get back to her volunteer work and giving to others. I mean, this woman was just a remarkable person. Mm-hmm. She really was. Mm-hmm. So someone else could take those same facts and create a woe is me or a victim or why me story. And, you know, maybe she had those moments too, but she was the model for an extraordinary story. She really, really
and
was.
And it sounds like, based on what you just said, a big lever, I guess, for her, and that was viewing, well, I guess, life in general, but more specifically, the different elements in her life at that point as gifts, right?
and they were.
And you frame it as a gift, and you see it differently, right?
Yes, you do.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, if people want to get started in developing their story, then their extraordinary story, then they should read your book. And while they're waiting on that to arrive, what should they do to get started? What's the first step?
I would say notice the stories that they tell, especially the stories they repeat. And then I would say notice the language, like the most common words you use. And ones that you use over and over again, almost like we were talking about an experiment with that client of just doing something different. I love to ask clients to collect some data. So it might be notice the words that you're using and the stories that you're telling, and just collect some data without any judgment about how many times a day or how many days a week use particular words, and you'll start to notice, oh my God, like for me, I use yes a lot, mm-hmm. which has upsides and downsides. You can say yes too much. And pay attention and notice the impact that that has.
Yeah. So some self-observation around your own language and the impact of your language.
Yeah, I do. In workshops that I do an exercise called complaints and requests. Mm-hmm. And when I ask people to complain, they do it so easily. And when I ask them if they complained about something they've ever complained about before, almost every hand in the room goes up. Uh-huh. And then I ask, how many have they complained about it more than once before?
Yeah.
Still, all the hands go up. And I think we're unconscious about how much we're complaining. I mean, in today's world, there's a lot of complaining going on.
Yeah.
And there's an impact that has, not just on us as individuals, but on us as leaders. It has an emotional contagion to it, and it's completely unproductive.
Yeah, I love the way you frame it as an emotional contagion. That's really true, and I think we see that in society in general at the moment. You know, it's you're right. There's a lot of complaining, and probably for good reason. But yeah. So,
and if we can turn those into requests or make a request of someone else, uh-huh. we can turn the complaint into something more productive. Maybe not completely successful, but at least it feels better that we're doing something toward what we want.
Right. Yeah, that's good. So the last big question I wanted to ask you, maybe sounds kind of weird, but I would love to hear your thoughts on it. So once you've developed your story, like, you know, I've got this great, extraordinary story, what do I do with it?
Well, the client that comes to mind when I think of that, there was a woman at a large company who wanted to get a promotion, and she created a new story. And one of the stories from her past that she was so punished by, or, you know, it really affected her, was that her parents used to kid her that she was adopted. Mm. She actually was the biological child of these parents, but it was a humiliating experience that impacted her lifelong. And when I took the same facts of her story for her and tried to create a draft extraordinary story, it was remarkable because here she was actually already considering adopting a child. She did end up adopting a child. And so she took that old story of pain and turned it into something beautiful that she had no idea could turn that upside down. So you really can't make fun of someone for being adopted when your grandchild is now adopted, right?
Wow.
And it was a story of love. That's one story or experience that comes to mind. And another one, one woman, and I think I use her in the book as well, she wanted to do so many different things, one of which was travel, and she ended up doing a lot of that. But at a workshop I gave at her company, she told people, which I didn't know actually until I was giving this workshop, that she thought bigger. She didn't let things hold her back. And she thought of more possibilities. That's the idea, is to just broaden that vision. I think you say in the next level, You know, sometimes we've got to have blinders on and focus, and sometimes we've got to look really wide at that off, you know, on the mm-hmm. balcony and see what's really possible. And she was able to do that. I think that just makes my heart sing when people think about the possibilities instead of the
yeah. Home. And I, you know, the word that came to mind as you were sharing those stories was transformative, which was a word you used, transformation earlier. And I guess, you know, maybe that's when the transformation happens, is when, you know, you've got the story and you start acting on it.
Right. Well, you have these, like a caterpillar has, have you ever heard of these imaginal cells that caterpillars
have? No, what's that?
These are the cells that help this caterpillar turn into a butterfly. And I believe we all have these imaginal cells within us, and we can transform and take flight. And it's a pretty different experience being a caterpillar than it is being a butterfly.
Yeah.
Living a smaller story, and oh, I hope I don't screw up in this meeting, or I don't, you know, fall down or whatever, make a big mistake, is a very different way of living than what Jack Nicklaus calls, you want to think, I want to hit the ball down the middle of the mm-hmm. fairway. You don't want to think, oh, I hope
yeah,
I don't hit the ball
right.
in the tree.
Yeah, because sure enough, you'll hook it to the left and into the woods, right? Yeah.
What we focus on is what yeah, transpires,
yeah.
right?
So as we wrap up, what is one key thought or piece of advice you want to leave with the folks that are listening to us?
You know, the thing I hear over and over again is the reason people don't want to live a bigger story is they want to be humble. They don't want to be a braggart. They don't want to be a blowhard. And I would love for people to realize that your extraordinary story can be both humble and powerful. It can be both grateful and inspiring and with a bold theme that comes from your heart. And no one's going to resent or resist that, because that, if it comes from your heart, it really comes from a place of love, and love is irresistible.
I can't think of a better way to end. Thank you for that. So Maria, this is a wonderful book, and congratulations. I know it's so much work to put a book together and get it out into the world, and you've done a fabulous job with that. It's called Leading with Yes, A Practical Guide to Discovering and Living Your Extraordinary Story by Maria Van Hecken, who I've had the pleasure of talking with just now. And you can tell from the conversation, I'm sure, what a wonderful coach she is. And if you think she's a great coach, then you'll love her book. Maria, thanks so much.
Can I Please. Add one thing, which I forgot? So all the tools in the book are available free
oh, yes.
on my
I should
website.
Have asked you that. Go so, ahead. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so leadingwithyes.com is where the book is, and yes2yes.com with the number 2, YES. To yes.com, but all the tools are free on the leadingwithyes.com page. And I'd be thrilled if you went and downloaded a few and started writing your own extraordinary
story. I'm so glad
story.
You brought that up, and I apologize for not prompting it. And then since we're on that, the book is available on Amazon. Anywhere else you wanted to look for the book?
No, that's great. Amazon, it's on Smashwords, it's on a bunch of those Barnes and Noble, but it's available anywhere. All you have to do is Google it. Leading
it's,
with Yes.
It's the age we live in, just Google it. Google Maria Van Hecken, and you'll find her website.
That's right. I'm the only Maria Van Hecken in the world. So
yeah,
it's pretty
yeah,
easy.
You'll, when you find her, you found her. Okay. Thanks so much, Maria. I really appreciate it. And congratulations.
Thank you so much.